Welcome to Hot Flashes and Cold Topics, a podcast for women in midlife and beyond. At Hot Flashes and Cold Topics, we talk about anything and everything to do with midlife. My name is Bridget.
And I'm Colleen.
And today we are really excited and honored to have Gretchen Carlson as our guest. And Gretchen Carlson has done so much for women in advocating just how to fight
women's rights. Yeah.
She is such an advocate and a proponent of women's rights. You know that she was Miss America, and she also was a journalist. She was on CBS. She was on Fox and Friends. And you also know that she sued Roger Ailes and can't really talk a lot about that. She can't talk at all about the lawsuit itself and the details of the lawsuit, but she has used that and used her voice to start so many wonderful things for women to get their voices heard. She has a nonprofit, Lift Our Voices. She has a bill right now that she has been testifying in Congress that we hope passes to do away with forced arbitration in the workplace. Because after reading her book, Be Fierce, you learn so much about the details of that. If you ever are faced with this and you have to handle this in the workplace, I feel like her book, Be Fierce, is like a handbook for what to do. And these are the steps that you need to take because it's just she had to go through it and she just wanted something out there for women. So we are just so grateful for what she has done for women.
And she has done a lot. And I think that what happened with Roger Ailes and her settlement, you know, she's legally precluded from talking about the facts of the case. Having gone through that experience made her pivot into this world of fighting for women's rights against sexual harassment in the workplace. And her book, as you were saying, Bridget, kind of reads as a how-to. Like, hypothetically, if you were to sue, you should have tapes and this and that. Because she can't come out and say what she did, but she kind of says if you were going to do something like that, hypothetically, you should, which is another way of saying do this. You know, always check with your particular state's laws, because every state is different. But again, it's under the cloak of secrecy. And until we get rid of that secrecy element, women's rights won't be protected and our voices won't be heard. So the fact that she took it upon herself to do that and really fight a huge system, Fox News, talk about a powerhouse to fight and get an apology, which you bring up, which was a great question. You also, I thought, asked her a very important question about, you know, not everyone has the funds that Gretchen Carlson has, and she named several organizations, and we'll let her tell them, several organizations that you can look to find avenues and attorneys and funding. So that was important to hear as well. And she just, you know, I didn't even realize that I knew she was a violin prodigy, but wow, her talent and doing the research, just listening to her play was amazing. So she's a very well-rounded woman.
Wow. I don't know.
Exactly. Yeah. Going to Stanford and all that fun. And now, you know, she says she did this also for her with her children and the next generation in mind. And that's so important, because I know you've spoken about your daughter, but just watching my girls kind of not take the crap that I think I took because I thought I had to, that was just the climate. And they're not taking it. And every time a woman speaks up and fights the system, like Gretchen Derrid, is one less of our daughters that has to, you know?
Right.
So we have just such a great conversation with her, and we're going to get it started now, guys. So enjoy it. Welcome back to Hot Flashes and Cool Topics. And today, Bridget and I are really grateful that we have Gretchen Carlson on the show. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
We're excited to talk to you. There's so much we want to cover, but I kind of wanted to start with, Bridget and I both finished your book, Be Fierce, which really kind of chronicles your advocacy into sexual harassment in the workplace. Now, for most people, they know that in 2006, you filed a lawsuit against Roger Ailes, who is the founder of Fox News. And as a result of that, you cannot talk about the facts of the case or or the allegations in the complaint, but it kind of brought you into this whole new world of advocacy. So can we start by talking about that?
Sure. Yeah, listen, my life has worked in twists and turns, you know, so it's not like you aspire to one day be the poster child for sexual harassment in the workplace. But, you know, when something bad happens to you, you try, at least I've tried to make things have a good result and, you know, a good end result. And what happened really was that, like so many other women, you feel like you're the only one battling this and you feel so alone. And then I started hearing from literally dozens and then hundreds and then thousands of other women around the country, which was the impetus for writing my book, Be Fierce, is that I wanted to share their stories because they felt so silenced. And I realized that harassment in the workplace was a pervasive epidemic. And I had no idea when I filed my case that so many others had been affected by this. And so it really just launched me. Every day was something, a new experience. I always say it's surreal because I just was like, okay, what am I doing today? Okay, I'm trying to change the world. It's moved from one thing to the next. So I wrote the book in honor of all these other women. Then I introduced a bill on Capitol Hill. And then recently in the last year and a half, I formed my own nonprofit, Lift Our Voices. And all of this advocacy work is to change the way in which we handle harassment in the workplace, specifically these silencing mechanisms that are in place that keep all of these stories and all the dirty laundry covered up. And that's the most simplistic way of describing what I'm trying to change. It's very complicated, actually, but that's why I can't tell my story. I should be able to tell my own story. Everyone out there who's had something bad happen to them at work should be able to tell their story. And that's the only way we heal. So that's what I'm trying to change. Because the minute that you take away the secrecy, first of all, the behavior might stop. Second of all, you know, the power pendulum completely changes because the person who thinks they have no power and they're silenced, they suddenly have a lot of power. And plus then the whole end game is that people change, the culture changes, and that we stop getting rid of women for simply having the courage to come forward, and we end up getting rid of the bad actors instead. I mean, that should be the model. So as you can see, there's just a tremendous amount of work to be done. And this is really what I fill my life with right now. I'll just end by saying that people who know me really well say that this is what you were destined to always do. And, you know, I was a child violinist. I loved going to school and really concentrated on that. And then I've been a journalist for 30 years and have had achievements there. But you know, if I'm successful in changing the workplace with regard to how women are treated, that will be my greatest achievement in my life, aside from my children. But so to me, this is, you know, this is something that it's funny how you can get into your middle years and think sometimes, you know, what am I going to do with myself? This is what I'm doing. And it feels really good to know that I could potentially help millions of people.
You mentioned in your book how you pivot. And like you've just said, you never dreamed that this would be your pivot. And nobody, you know, says, hey, I think I want to be the poster child for sexual harassment advocacy. Mm-hmm. But it's so important. And I felt like after reading your book that it was a handbook. I felt like this is a handbook. And these you included so many important steps to take that if you face this. And I mean, I think the biggest shocker to me in your book was how HR is really not your friend.
I know.
You know, in your book, you said they work for the company. Mm-hmm. So they're going to try whatever they can to keep this quiet. So that was a really big eye opener for me. And I was just curious, and I don't know if you can talk about it or not. Why do you think you got an apology where so many other people didn't get a public apology? You got a public apology. I don't know if you can. Why do you think that happened? I don't know if you can mention that or not.
Well, let's not give the company credit like they just came up with that.
That's true. That's true.
Hypothetically speaking, nobody really ever wants to apologize. And I have to tell you that of all the thousands of women who've reached out to me, that's the number one thing they want. They more than anything, other than keeping their job, you know, and just keeping working, which is really what women just want to do. And for some reason, we think that solving filing harassment cases is a good idea to get rid of the women. I mean, it makes no sense at all because they've done nothing wrong, but that's the way it's currently handled. And so apologies are the second thing that they, that's the most important thing. And I would say that 98% of any woman who's faced this never gets that. And it lingers with them for their life because the apology is a way of making you know that what you did wasn't wrong and that what you did in coming forward was the right thing to do. So I can say hypothetically is that it was really, really important to me that that was acknowledged, you know, that because women are made to feel like they're crazy. Mm-hmm. And there's so much gaslighting that goes on, you know, that makes you feel like you're all alone, crazy woman forever thinking this. You start questioning your own sanity. And so when you actually see somebody say, "We're sorry for the way we treated you and it was wrong and we treated you with complete disrespect," you know, suddenly it's like, oh my God, they're acknowledging what I went through.
It's also interesting that you say that most women never go back to their profession after this happens. Can you talk a little bit about that? Obviously a lot of them are let go and that's why they filed lawsuits, but is it just, you know, not necessarily that particular job, but their actual profession they don't go back to?
No, that's the, and every time I say that in a speech or a podcast or to executives, they all look at me dumbfounded, like, huh? Like, that's really what's happening? I mean, listen, we've lost 1 million women to the workforce just because of COVID. Okay, how many years have we gone back in time? What is the main mission of companies? To retain women and people of color. And by the way, every study shows that when you do that, you increase your bottom line. So smart business people understand that that is the goal, right? But we have this whole secret society that's going on in our workplaces where we are secretly putting women out to pasture. And nobody's talking about it until I started talking about it recently, right? I mean, some people did, but the reason you didn't hear about these cases is because they were all going to these secret chambers. That's the problem. And so, you know, the idea that we're okay with thousands and maybe millions of women never working again, I'm not okay with that. And that's why I'm trying to change this. You know, companies say to me, well, what can we do to try and make this better? Hire all those women back. Hire all these women that have done nothing wrong, who never work in their professions. And here's why they don't. Because imagine if you've been at a company for 10, 15 years and something bad happens to you and you think you're doing the right thing. You go to HR, you tell them, and immediately they go, nobody will ever know about this because we're going to put her in the secret chamber. Mm-hmm. And then they promptly blacklist you, demote you, and you get fired. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now you try to go get another job. And the new employer says, well, why did you leave such and such? Oh, I can't tell you. Well, could we call them for, you know, a reference? Or No. So the automatic assumption is that you did something wrong, right? And that's why these women, they never resurface in their chosen professions. And you have to wonder, this is what we're trying to accomplish at our nonprofit, is to do research to find out how many women have been subject to this. Because I can tell you just anecdotally from the people that have reached out to me, it's thousands and it could be more.
You know, you were talking about if it looks like they were demoted, then they're going to look at that. Also employers, but the trauma, the post-traumatic stress from going through this event at work. And you mentioned that as well in your book, Be Fierce. You know, I don't know, what can they do? Is there anything in place to help women that have gone through this, because that's traumatic to go through this. I mean,
not to mention the experience of it all, but then when your voice is silenced and you can never tell anyone about it, nobody's really done a tremendous amount of studies on what that does to somebody's psyche, right? Mm-hmm. That you can't own your own truth.
Right.
And that's happened to me in my life. I've had movies made about my story and I can't even participate in them. I can't even tell both of you whether or not the depictions of me were accurate or not. I can't say whether or not I thought certain, you know, actresses, Nicole Kidman or Naomi Watts, which one did a better job. I mean, what I can say is that I'm incredibly flattered that actresses of that caliber would take on these roles, because 5 years ago, Hollywood would not have made these movies, right? So that's a positive. But people should be able to own their own stories. And so in and of itself, that probably contributes tremendously to PTSD. And then, like I was saying, the gaslighting and people inside of the workplace making you feel like you're the crazy one, right? That contributes. And then, of course, you know, there's so much, there are so many stereotypes and myths about this whole issue that even if you did confide in people who are close to you, they might actually believe the myths. And so they might like be like, oh, maybe she's a little crazy, right? So there, you have it coming at you from all sides. You know, I will say that for me, the most heartening moment in my decision to come forward, one of them, was when both of my parents, who I'm still blessed to have in my life, they called me about 6 months before I filed the lawsuit, and we had been talking about it, you know, and they didn't really want to believe what was really happening. And I'm from Minnesota, where people are really nice, and it's not like you sue people every day. And so they were very against it at first, but then they did call me one night and said, I talk about it in the book, where they said, we're with you. And that was so important, because it made me realize I wasn't crazy, and that my parents believed in me and would be with me when I was going to slog through this, you know, really incredible, difficult time. So, you know, there are a lot of broken women out there. There are a lot of broken women who have gone through traumatic experiences like this and then get piled upon for not being able to have a voice either. And back in the past, nobody cared about them either. Nobody cared about their stories. You know, a lot of women I've spoken to, like, if you have some like 80-year-old guy trying to hit on you, you know, you're like, okay. I mean, you know what I mean? It might be not nice to experience that, but what really is awful is when you don't agree to do anything and then the retaliation starts. That's the undersold part of the story of sexual harassment in the workplace, because, you know, with all due respect, the media likes the titillating sexual headlines, right? Oh, he said that to her. But what kind of becomes underreported is what happens to the woman when she doesn't agree to go along with what's being asked of her, right? Because that's what the really bad thing is. That's like, you know, people have told me that's like walking through the hallways with a knife in your back and turning around and watching the blood drip down and wondering who's coming for you next. The retaliation is in the form of suddenly you get a poor, you know, work evaluation, even though you've gotten really great ones all along. Suddenly the promotion that you were given, you know, or about to get is suddenly, you know, not there anymore. Suddenly they start questioning, you know, every little thing that you're doing and criticizing it and saying that it's wrong. And slowly but surely you start to feel, you know, this world of people coming after you in a really negative way. And unfortunately, this is all part of the process, because what they're trying to do likely is drive you out, right? Because you did not agree to do something that you didn't want to do. So it's really, to me, it's the retaliation is what's the undersold part of the story and the most detrimental, I think, to most of the women that I've spoken to.
You were recently speaking on Capitol Hill because you are trying to have a bill passed that talks about forced arbitration, getting rid of forced arbitration and NDAs, non-disclosure agreement.
Yeah. So my bill is only about arbitration. So my bill is called the Ending Forced Arbitration Act of Sexual Harassment. It's only 3 pages long. It's really simple. It basically says that companies cannot put in your employment agreement an arbitration clause, which means that if something happens to you at work, you can't go to court. So what's happened over the last like 3 to 4 decades is that companies figured out how to keep all their dirty laundry silent by putting in this clause, this arbitration clause. And I know people hear this and they go, what the hell is arbitration? So basically, and this is why nobody else has really, I mean, people have tried, but it's never gotten a lot of traction to get rid of it, because it's hard to understand. And by the way, most people, when I speak in front of groups of 2,000 and 3,000 people, I'll ask people, raise your hand if you know if you have an arbitration clause in your employment contract. Mm-hmm. Nobody raises their hand because nobody knows what the hell they have. Okay. Here's why you need to know. If you have an arbitration clause and something bad happens to you at work, you don't have a case. It's as plain as simple as that. That's what my lawyers told me. They said, you don't have a case. And I said, what do you mean? And they said, because you have an arbitration clause. And that means your story will never see the light of day. Arbitration is a secret proceeding where instead of being able to file a public lawsuit and go to a jury of your peers, you will go to this little chamber with one arbitrator that many times the company picks for you. And they try to tell you it's a really good idea because it's cheaper, right? And there are not the same amount of witnesses, not the same amount of depositions. There are no appeals. The company usually wins these cases. The last study showed that only 3% of the time does the employee win. And you might get some sort of a paltry settlement. Now you never work again. And the worst part of this story is that because it's all secret, nobody else knows it's happening at your workplace. And the perpetrator gets to stay working because nobody knows. And so not only does that person get to continue to have their job, but now they get to keep harassing other people. Mm-hmm. And this is how the cycle has continued over the last 10, 20, 30 years. And it's why we never heard about any of these stories, because they were going to this secret place. So that's what I'm trying to change. I'm trying to make it illegal for companies to force people into this secret place for things that happened to them that were never intended to go there. Like the original purpose of arbitration was like the stories that you would see on Judge Judy's show. Like, you know, your neighbor knocked over your fence and hasn't paid you the $300, right? So why should you go all the way to court to deal with that? The courts are already too busy. Their cases are all clogged up. So arbitration was like a really good way for a small business dispute, not for human rights violations in the workplace. Discrimination, sexual harassment, assault. These are all these types of things. Companies, they were like, oh gosh, yay, we can put this into secrecy. Nobody will ever know about this. And they've been abusing what the intent of arbitration really was. So my bill would not allow them to do that anymore. And I'm very happy to say that my bill is bipartisan. And it should be, because before somebody decides to harass you, they don't ask you what political party you're in. They don't care. This is all about power. And so that's why I really believe that we should come together. And you know, when I testified 2 weeks ago, we have so much more support now, I think, coming from both sides. And I'm really, really optimistic about getting this passed. And it will be a game changer. It really will, because companies will no longer be able to basically have these stories, you know, put away into a chamber where nobody ever hears about them. It's the most important step in solving harassment in the workplace.
And now you talked about how they try to, you don't get a good settlement typically. You said 3% usually win their case, mm-hmm. and then the settlement's not good, and then they're out of a job.
And they never work again. And so they take away your livelihood, you know, your ability to make any money. And I forgot to mention also that arbitrators return for repeat business at companies where they found in favor of the company, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. The companies tend to hire the arbitrators that have found in favor. It's like wink, wink. Right. So it's really interesting, because when I go to Congress and when I meet with members of Congress, sometimes people that you think wouldn't support this bill, oftentimes they will. And you know what the connection is? Either they have a personal story where they've known somebody who's gone through this, or they're trial lawyers and they've seen how unfair it is. Mm-hmm. And so it's really interesting when I've had meetings with members of Congress who I think are never, ever going to support this. And I'll walk in and they'll be like, hey, you don't even have to sell me on this. I know how bad it is. It's really interesting. So I take every single person that wants to support this, and I have them on both sides, and it's the optimism is growing to pass this, and like I said, it will be a game changer.
It's interesting you brought up, you know, the part that it's either happened to them or their trial lawyer, but I always, you know, you wonder why, you know, you mentioned how people, lots, so many women weren't taken seriously for years and years when they would report this, and they were, lewd things were said to them and just horrible things. And you also mentioned in your book, the importance of men to be an advocate for women as well. I'm trying to figure out when the point comes, when you get a person to see your side. And it's almost like, when do you humanize women that this happens to? It's, to me, it almost feels like they don't humanize the woman that that's happened to until it's happened to someone that they love, or it's happened to them themselves. I don't know. Do you have any insight onto how to get that table turned?
Yeah, listen, I think that when all these stories became really, really public, people, you know, I think a lot of conversations happened that had never happened before amongst couples, you know, and amongst friends and amongst family members, where, listen, women are socialized to sort of just grin and bear it and stuff all these bad experiences that we may have had in our lives down deep, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I was sexually assaulted twice in my 20s, and I never told anyone for 25 years, because we are socialized to think like, well, what did I do? Like, it must have been my fault, or I'm so ashamed that this happened to me. I thought these guys thought I was smart, and instead they, you know, stuck their tongue down my throat. And so we have never been told that it's really important to speak up, because look what happens when you do. It's never been good, right? Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm also trying to change. And we've seen a tremendous amount of progress since my story happened 4.5 years ago. You know, women are being believed. That's a huge step in the right direction. Mm-hmm. Men are being held accountable. They're being fired from their jobs, and they're issuing apologies, as we talked about. And, you know, that's massive change. That even just 4.5 years ago, women were not believed at all. So I do, but I will just also share that I think that once so many stories started coming out, what really kept the movement alive was that the media started covering these stories, and the American public was paying attention to these stories. And I think part of it was that they were mad. They were like, wait a minute, we're still dealing with this in 2016, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21. I thought we had solved this. And I think my personal opinion as to why so many people thought we had solved this is because they weren't hearing about these stories anymore, right? But we've already discussed why they weren't hearing about those stories, right? They were all going. So then once the American public was like, wait a minute, this is so incredibly awful and wrong that this is still happening. And then I would just also credit social media. I don't love it for my kids, but social media has really kept this movement alive, because it was a way to, for people to be able to either put their name and face on their story or not. Mm-hmm. And it just allowed these stories to multiply and make people know that they were not alone. And so, you know, there's all interesting ways to analyze why it's moving in the right direction, but those are the three big ways that I think it is.
Mm-hmm. You know, after your case came out, and then there was Harvey Weinstein and the Me Too movement, which was amazing, and then we had kind of the introduction of locker room talk, and it was almost justified again in society that, you know, we're just men in the locker. How did you feel watching that? Because it was like we took 3 steps forward and then we took 2 steps back.
Yeah. That's a cop out. And, you know, there were other things that were said, like, hey, well, women shouldn't be allowed to go to business dinners anymore with men. I mean, what? Like, right. We just got on the golf course. You know, I mean, you just stop going to strip clubs with women executives. I mean, it's like, okay, now that, like, we're going to go back into the dark ages because men don't know how to behave. I mean, and I want to be clear, this is not an assault on men. These are bad actors amidst, you know, a lot of men who want workplaces to be safe. And that's why, back to your other point earlier, it's so important to invite men into this conversation. You just have to, because the bottom line is they still pretty much rule the world. Mm-hmm. And they're making most of the business decisions. And therefore, we have to educate them about how detrimental these silencing mechanisms are and how important it is to try and keep women in the workplace. And we have to invite them to be on our team. Mm-hmm. So that's part of my outreach. You know, when I wrote the book, Be Fierce, I never intended to do a whole chapter about men. But what started happening was I started hearing from all these men who were incredibly supportive of women. And I was like, you know, I really want to honor these men because I don't ever want it to make it seem like this is a, you know, this is an assault on men, because it's not. It's just that they've been in positions of power, and we need to educate them to, you know, allow us to get a seat at the table as well.
Right. And I'm kind of circling back to what you said earlier about how expensive it is and how they would get just a terrible settlement if they even won when it was an arbitration. And you also talked about just how it is expensive if a woman wants to take another path and has the opportunity to even hire a lawyer, hire an attorney, the cost involved with that, sometimes it's unattainable. And are there sources or services out there to help women in a case like this?
Yeah, it's a great point. So betterbrave.com is one place where people can go to, they will align you with a lawyer. Also the National Women's Law Center in Washington, D.C. I also created a program called the Gretchen Carlson Leadership Initiative, where we did a 13-city tour for underprivileged women for this exact reason. Because that was like the number one question I got is, okay, you may have had the means and the resources and the national platform to hire great lawyers and have your case be known, but what about women who are working two jobs and trying to feed kids? And that question really troubled me, because I didn't have a great answer for it at the beginning. So I created this and funded this leadership initiative for thousands of women all across the country who had nowhere else to go. And so it was a 2-day summit in all these cities. And we provided childcare and food and lawyers. And so these women would come and they would be educated on the issue. They would get legal help. And they would also gain self-esteem, which is so important. You know, so many of them would walk in with their heads down and feel ashamed and felt like they had nowhere to turn. And by the end of these 2 days, it was some of the most rewarding work of my life, because they would raise their hand and say, I'm thinking of running for political office. And I'd be like, wow, well, that's a transformation from yesterday. So it was so inspiring to see that we were helping so many women. But look, there aren't enough resources out there. Those are the other two resources where women can go. And of course, they can go to my personal website, or they can go to liftourvoices.org, which is my nonprofit organization, to learn more about my work and how we're trying to help other women.
Mm-hmm. One of the other solutions that you talk about that's very important is turning bystanders into allies, mm-hmm. for people who see something to say something. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, we all learned after 9/11. I covered 9/11. I was working at CBS News at the time and spent months down at Ground Zero and lived in New York City. And, you know, it became sort of a national motto: if you see something, say something, right? And imagine if we applied that to seeing bad things in the workplace. Instead, the way that it's worked in the past is if you saw something, you ran away. Because guess what happened if you came forward to help somebody else? You were then promptly blacklisted, demoted, and fired. And I document men in the book that happened to, who were simply trying to help other women. Hopefully that's starting to change also in the workplace, but it brings me to why it's so important to do bystander training, because we have to celebrate and encourage people to help others in the workplace. And of course, the buck stops at the top, so educate leaders to not retaliate against people who do that. And that it's incredibly important for people to speak up, because what tends to happen is, let's say that the leader of the company is the perpetrator. And let's say that in a, you know, an executive meeting that he says lewd things and, you know, tells a horrible joke about women or something like that. And nobody says anything. So then it's like a kid with a candy jar. The next time, instead of taking one cookie, they're going to take two because they got away with it, right? So now the next time, the perpetrator says something even worse, and people kind of feel embarrassed and they laugh, but nobody says anything. Nobody says, like, don't ever speak to a woman like that ever again, right? Mm-hmm. Imagine if they did, that stops it. That person is hopefully humiliated. Instead, what tends to happen is, so now this toxic work environment kind of becomes the norm, because the more and more that nobody speaks up as a bystander, the more toxic it becomes and the more normalized this horrible environment becomes. And I always point back to the example of, you know, imagine if Billy Bush had said to Donald Trump on that bus, "Don't talk about my colleague Nancy O'Dell like that," right? And mm-hmm. and Billy Bush has tried to do, he's made a metamorphosis and has tried to turn around his life, and I credit him for everything that he's done since then. But imagine if during that time he would have said something. Not that that would have changed Donald Trump's behavior in the future, but it would have in that moment, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And,
yeah. So it shows how important it can be in stopping the behavior, you know, right away. And it shows how important it is to have leaders at the top who make it very clear that they are not going to tolerate that behavior. And that in fact, they are going to celebrate people who come forward and tell them something's wrong.
Right. And you also talk about, you know, how important it is for us to help the next generation. You talk about also the confidence when girls hit adolescence, all of a sudden the drop in confidence. And I know that happened to me personally. Mm-hmm. Are there, you know, what advice do you have to help that issue?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm doing all this work for my kids, you know, and for the next generations, because I think a lot of us thought we had solved this, but we hadn't. So, you know, sure, we don't want to have it to happen to our younger people. Listen, I think, you know, younger people really inspire me, because as I travel across the country, I realize that when I go to speak before COVID, I had as many young men in the audience as I did women. And that was very inspiring to me, that when they would come up and approach me afterwards at my book signing, they both want to solve the problem together. And that gave me a lot of hope that it wasn't just women coming, because it shouldn't be. This should be both men and women. Because by the way, this is predominantly a man's issue, not a woman's issue.
Yeah.
We need to reframe all of that too, because when men hear women's issue, they go, "Oh, tune out." not because they don't care, but because they just don't think they need to think about that, like buying tampons, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So all of a sudden, when you call it what it really is, then maybe you get a different vibe. But anyway, I'm very inspired by young people, because I think in general they want to work collectively to solve problems, and I have seen that across the country. So that's been really, really great. And then, you know, I've seen it in my own children. Mm-hmm. And they were 13 and 11 at the time, and now they're 17 and just 16. And I've seen that courage transfer to them, and I've seen the awareness transfer to them. And the most important thing is that it transfers to my son.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Because, mm-hmm. you know, I think we do a great job in our society of empowering girls. What we don't do is tell them the reality of what might actually happen to them in the workplace. And what we also don't do enough of is making sure that we don't stereotype our sons with depictions of girls that make them look weak. And make sure that we raise them to understand and respect women at home, so that when they get into the workplace, they transfer that same amount of respect. I mean, that to me, educating young boys is like one of the most important parts of this entire mission, because you got to get to them young. They develop their opinions early on. You know, that video, I talk about it in the book, but it just makes me cringe every time I think about it, with that video that people are probably familiar with, when they show like 5 and 6 year olds and they say to them, "Hey, throw like a girl." And both boys and girls, you know, rev it up and they throw as hard as they can. And then you get to puberty and they say, "Throw like a girl." And both sexes make fun of it.
Mm-hmm.
And they barely, they throw it like a wimp, right?
Yes.
And that shows how young we need to get to boys and girls to not automatically go into this woman are weak mode, right? Mm-hmm. So it's crucial in trying to change the way that those stereotypes are so embedded in us. So we have a lot of work to do, but I'm optimistic about our young people.
On a personal note, you've kind of entered your midlife and beyond with such force and energy, kind of, you know, in the aftermath of saying, okay, how do I take my experience, or as they say, make your mess your message. Not that it was a mess, but you know what I'm saying. You've started a podcast. You are now, like you said, trying to get a bill passed. You started with People TV. Is this energy just, has anything kind of changed your perspective being now in midlife doing this versus when you were 20 and starting your career as a local news reporter?
No, I actually think that I'm better now. I mean, I've got so much more wisdom. I mean, women are, we're so much more wise when we have lifetime of experience behind us. And also I've gotten so much better at like saying no. And I thought I was going to be able to say no more when I turned 40, and that didn't work out very well. And then I thought I was going to be able to say no more when I turned 50, and I really achieved that. So I got fired at Fox 2 days after my 50th birthday. So that was a big happy birthday. I believe also my biggest message to young women is to stop being so nice. I mean, not that we shouldn't be, cordial and all that, but we're socialized again to be extra nice and to always say, I'm sorry. You should count how many times you say, I'm sorry in a day. You'll be like horrified. Or you should count how many times you hear other people that you come across say, I'm sorry. I say to my daughter all the time, don't say that. You're not sorry for anything. I mean, if you are, if she truly has done something, of course, but we just like open a door and somebody's there and we go, oh, sorry. It's like, no. Also, the biggest thing that's happened to me is that I am a recovered perfectionist. And I became that very late in life. And I think that that's been the greatest gift of getting older, is that I don't beat myself up anymore about trying to be perfect. And listen, it's great when failure is how you achieve real success. And, so often women are also put in that box of having to be perfect all the time. So I don't know. I sort of look at it like aside from the wrinkles, I look at it as like an old wine that ages better. And listen, 50's like the new 30. And I look at pictures of my grandmother and she when she was my age, I'm like, oh, I mean, it's changed so dramatically. And I just sort of embraced it,
I always say it's the hair. That hair from the 60s, 50s, that tight little curly hair.
Exactly.
It ages better. Yeah.
And women are now embracing their gray too. So there you go.
Yeah.
Exactly. We want to thank you so much for coming on the show. And we also want to thank you for everything that you have done and that you continue to do for women being a voice and trying to change the narrative in something that, like you said, has been kind of pushed down and kept quiet for so long. So thank you so much for that.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Thanks. Thanks for having me, ladies. It was fun to chat with you.
We want to thank Gretchen Carlson so much for taking the time to speak with us. It was a really important conversation. I think we all learned a lot from it. We unfortunately did not get to talk about Bombshell as much as we wanted to, because I really wanted to know what was it like to have Nicole Kidman play you, That was, it must have been so frustrating, or Naomi Watts, either one is fine. It must have been so frustrating to not be allowed to be a part of that taping, to be on set, because she's legally barred from being there. But if someone said, oh, who would you like to play you? And they pick Nicole Kidman, that's pretty impressive. She's everywhere right now. I mean, that woman is in everything.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll have to have her back on to talk more about that.
And you need to check out her website as well, GretchenCarlson.com, because she has loads of information on there. There's information on her website about Lift Our Voices, which is another thing, another avenue that women can lean to if this happens to them and they need some help. Also, I think she mentioned Better Brave is another organization. BetterBrave.com is another organization. And plus, you can
the National Women's, I think, organization in Washington, D.C., she also
mentioned that, yes.
And her initiative, so she had done an initiative.
Right. There's just so much there. And she's got a podcast as well. A daily podcast, The News with Gretchen Carlson.
We can barely get out a weekly one, and she's doing
She's doing all and going to Congress and testifying. Get the news. It's Get the News with Gretchen Carlson.
And she's also on People TV. So she's quite the busy woman.
Yeah. And she's a mom and she's a wife. And, you know, so yeah, so she's got a lot going on. But, you know, I love how she mentions that she just has enjoyed, you know, her midlife and the pivots that she's made and really what she's doing for women and all of us and our daughters and our sons.
Yes. And the sons being really important. The fact that she's, because if we don't talk to our sons about this, it's, yes, it's a woman's issue, but men also have to be part of the solution. Because unless they're part of the solution, they're just going to continue to be the problem.
Right. Right. So we need to make sure they realize what is okay and what is not okay. And, you know, I really am grateful to her and admire her for everything that she's done.
I agree. So thank you guys so much for listening to the podcast today. We hope you learned a lot with Gretchen Carlson. Please subscribe on that little red subscribe button so that you never miss an episode, because you just never know who Bridget and I are going to bring on. And we're enjoying it as well. So we know you're enjoying it, but we kind of are in you know, awe as well sometimes when we're talking to these women. So thank you for listening. Have a great day. Follow us on all forms of social media, and we will talk to you next time.
Bye.